Hello, and welcome to the Conduits podcast series on humanizing investment. Inspired by Gillian Tett's book, Anthrovision, this series will focus on inspiring the next generation of investors to recognize the value of responsible investing. I'm Asha Ladd, Chief Investment Officer at Conduit Capital, and each episode, I will be talking to a leading responsible investor in the institutional investing space, getting to grips with each of their stories, understanding what led them towards a career in the space, and how they feel we can begin to humanize the finance industry. My guest today is Sir Ronald Cohen. Sir Ronald Cohen founded and led international private equity firm Apax Partners before, at age 60, deciding to dedicate himself to the impact revolution. Sir Ronald is passionate about advancing impact and the idea that companies need to be held to higher standards of seeking to do well for their shareholders and good for the world. He is the chairman of the Global Steering Group for Impact Investment, the author of Impact, Reshaping Capitalism to Drive Real Change, a Wall Street Journal bestseller, and considered to be one of the founders of the global venture capital industry. Sir Ronald splits his time between London, Israel, and New York, and on any given day, he can be found thinking about, writing about, or speaking about impact. Hobbies include tennis, traveling, theatre, and music. He is married with two children. Well, thank you for joining me, Sir Ronald. So when you spoke to Gillian last year for the Financial Times and the article Wall Street's New Mantra, Green is Good, you made the statement that the state of ESG, so environmental social governance, is now very similar to us to what the venture capital industry was like when you started four decades ago. So can you tell us what similar trends you're seeing to draw that conclusion and some of the differences you've seen 18 months on from that?
Sure, Asha. And it's very nice to be here with you at the Conduit, and please call me Ronnie. Yeah, the similarity is striking between venture capital and impact. When venture capital got started, there was no track record of performance, obviously. And some investors who went into the early funds, when asked why did they go in, could they prove that this would work, answered, we can't prove that this can work, but we have faith that it will work. And I think ESG and impact investing are at that stage. A lot of people are now focusing on it. There's a general feeling that the world needs to balance risk, return, and impact, that you can't just go out and make money without worrying about the consequences. But we haven't yet completely proved that this is going to be the way to outperform financially, which I firmly believe it is going to be. And entrepreneurs drove the tech revolution, as you know, Asha, and entrepreneurs will once again drive the impact revolution, which brings together a change in values, particularly among young people, leaps in technology, also very often driven by young tech entrepreneurs, and transparency on the impacts that companies create so that we can compare impact with impact and impact with profit.
And you know, it's interesting, and I shared this with you just before when we spoke, Ronnie, where I was, you know, tracking the sector for the last decade or so, and in particular when Bridges was formed. And I remember, you know, back in 2010, reading about the Gym Group and the case study and the thesis around that, about the less underserved and you know, allowing health and well-being to really percolate in those communities and markets. And actually remember thinking about how akin that felt to, you know, private equity investing and the mindset that you brought to that, and how different that was in the same bucket that you were lumped in terms of being impact investing with, say, Acumen, which is, you know, not-for-profit emerging markets. And so talk to us a little bit about that identity discussion, being, you know, being in the same group, but being different and actually sitting adjacent to each other and having a need for both of those parties.
So I think in the same way that venture capital required an ecosystem in order to bring about the tech revolution, impact today requires an ecosystem in order to change our economic system. And that ecosystem involves all manner of approaches in achieving impact. Some of those, like acumen, are impact only, without profit, although with return of capital. Some of them have to do with delivering below market rates of return while delivering measurable impact. And some, and it's your approach at Conduit Capital, are seeking to deliver market rates of return or better together with significant measurable impact. So the ecosystem that is arising today is springing partly from investment and partly from philanthropy. And I expect we're going to see all manner of funds and ventures that combine in different proportions profit and impact.
And what do you think some of those, you know, those what we call tribes, or Gillian has called tribes, will face? So the ESG tribe, the impact investing tribe, and the socially responsible investing tribe, as they seek to become this ecosystem and sit side by side with each other, adjacent also to the traditional markets.
I think the tribes are going to merge around the notion of measuring impact. The big problem ESG faces today is the accusation of greenwashing, as you know. And that accusation can only be dealt with if you measure impacts and can actually talk factually about the operational impacts, the employment impacts, the supply chain impacts, and the product impacts that companies create and translate them into monetary terms. Now, when you do that, impact investment and ESG become one, because today they share the intention to create impact. The 40 trillion of ESG doesn't measure it. The 2.5 trillion of impact investment measures the impact created. And because of the greenwashing backlash, and because of the confusion that it's creating in the minds of investors in particular, we're beginning to see regulators focus on bringing mandatory transparency. The SEC in the United States, the International Sustainability Standards Board in the rest of the world, the EU within the European Union. So I think at the end of the day, there will be a finance first and impact second tribe, if you like, and there will be an impact first and the finance second tribe. But they will both be measuring impact, and they will view themselves as playing the same game, but with somewhat different priorities.
Yeah, on the same quest. I love that. And also, it's interesting as well, because as you talk about regulators, I mean, it's both the measuring part as well as the defining part, as well as we've seen with the FCA and the SEC about what constitutes to be an ESG, financial vehicle versus a impact investment as well. So it's interesting that we're talking about identity once again, when the market's talking about identity. So I understand you're making your current focus or your life mission work all focused on impact weighted accounts, and so the acronym, and as everyone knows, you know, we like acronyms in the finance industry, so we're calling that IWAA. And so can you share with us what brought you to the conclusion, and I think you were alluding to it just now, on why IWA is the solution and what challenges it's seeking to address?
So there are a number of challenges that we have to meet at the same time, but perhaps the most fundamental one, which is capable of changing our whole economic system, is the standardization and monetization of impact. Because if you begin to put a monetary value on standards for measuring impact, you bring impact into financial analysis. What does that mean? It means that an investor can look at a company like ExxonMobil and say this company makes $39 billion of damage a year from its operations on the environment. Compare it with Shell of 23 and BP at 13. The implications from an investment point of view are that ExxonMobil is going to have to spend a ton of money in order to fix its carbon emissions, and that's going to hit its bottom line. The second implication is if a carbon tax comes in, ExxonMobil is going to be more heavily taxed than BP and Shell. And so investors begin to relate impacts to the valuation of companies. Already, we can see, Asha, a correlation. This is in the Harvard work of the IWA initiative to which you referred, between higher levels of pollution within many sectors and lower stock market value. So the weight of the $40 trillion of ESG has already tilted the scales against those that pollute more. Now, if you then extend the transparency to the employment impacts of companies, where you can begin to put, as the IWA initiative has done at Harvard, a value for the cost of diversity to society, or the lack of diversity to society. If you apply salary levels to missing representatives of gender or ethnic groups, comparing as we can do now through big data and using artificial intelligence, comparing the demographics within and outside the company's facilities, and describing an economic remuneration to the missing groups, you get the cost to that community. And so you can see that a company like Amazon has a $6.5 billion annual diversity debit against Apple's $2.4 billion a year. But if you relate it to the wage bill, Asher, you begin to get an insight, because Amazon actually is the better performer with 16% versus Apple's 25%. And so then as an investor, you begin to say, well, how much is it going to cost?
Can have the relative value discussion.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, because you talk about the impact and the weighting, and there's an equal weight to both of those elements.
And so all of a sudden, you begin to measure a company's performance along two dimensions instead of one, because both affect the company's value, their profitability, and their impact performance. That changes the behavior of companies. A lot of companies have their top executives remunerated according to the share price. Well, if impact is affecting the share price, these executives are going to change the behavior so they can hit numbers on the impact front that help to boost the value of their stock. That's why I've been focusing on impact transparency so heavily.
And can I ask, I mean, there's obviously a conscious piece in the word impact versus ESG. And what's the difference for you?
The difference for me is measurement. Both share the same intention to deliver profit as well as impact. But impact investment measures and ESG doesn't. Now, it's natural in some ways that ESG should have got into this position, because we didn't have the tools to measure impact. And the size of ESG, the $40 trillion, has pushed the efforts to measure impact more accurately forward. And if you read the G7 Impact Task Force report, which you've probably done, which emerged in December, you will see that they set the direction to a destination of impact accounting, and that after standardizing the quantity metrics, tons of CO2, liters of water used, and so on, standardizing the valuation of impact is the last milestone before we get to impact accounting. And in my view, that's going to come within 3 to 5 years. We're going to have mandatory publication of impact statements by companies showing their revenues, their costs, and their impacts in monetary terms.
As in, I mean, and can you give us an example of like a difference between an impact, something that you'd find in an impact account that you wouldn't find in an ESG, or actually even more in the traditional, you know, IFRS, and so that's International Finance Reporting Standards, which are, or this GAAP as well, which is the generally accepted accounting principles, and these are, you know, commonly followed accounting rules and standards by public companies.
So you can already see some industries are creating more damage than profit. And you can see that within industries, some companies are creating a lot more damage than others. Out of the 3,000 companies which the Harvard effort measured in terms of environmental impact, 400 created more damage than profit in a year. Wow. 1,000 created damage equivalent to 25% of profit. So you can begin to see investors saying, well, this company is unprofitable if you take into account all its impact. I'm not interested in investing in it. Or saying this industry, like the construction industry, the airline industry, the automobile industry, is a very heavy polluter. I don't want to invest in the laggards in it. I want to invest in the leaders who are setting the benchmark for progress to the right destination, and that applies to fossil fuels as well. And so we are living at a time where massive leaps of technology are enabling us to disrupt the business models of companies that create harm. The first example is Tesla. The success of Tesla isn't just based on the fact that its car outperformed in terms of, a velocity or design. The success goes back to consumers wanting to purchase cars that don't pollute. That's how the first consumers came to Tesla. That's how the talent came to Tesla. That's how the first investors came to Tesla. And so if you take into account the changed values in society today, where big chunks of the population don't want to buy the products of companies that are creating harm, or to work for them for that matter. And you combine that with leaps in technology that enable you to innovate and bring out products that have better impact performance, you can see that there's a massive wave of disruption ahead of us, with Tesla being the leader. Now, of course, if you don't measure all of Tesla's impact, you can't say that Tesla is a superb performer in terms of impact. It's a great performer in shifting away from the combustion engine, but we need to know how much pollution is created by the mining of the minerals and the manufacture
of the battery, of
the batteries and so on and so forth. So we are moving to a world of impact transparency, which is going to expose the vulnerability of certain companies because of their impact performance. And it's no different than the tech revolution was in this sense. Companies that embrace it will do a lot better than companies that ignore it. The companies that ignore it will see themselves disrupted and overtaken by new entrants, in the same way that Microsoft and Apple overtook IBM.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like how value investors think about it too. You know, is it a systematic change or is it a market cycle change? And if you believe that, as you say, you know, stakeholders are looking at values and that impacts whether you're a customer or whether an employee or whether you're part of the management team, you know, that really starts to become a systematic cycle than a market one.
Absolutely. This is very strongly a trend rather than a cycle. This whole impact movement is a mega trend.
And so on IWA, how does that sit adjacent to another acronym, ISSB, which is the International Sustainability Standards Board, and that was created by the IFRS Foundation? And how do you, I mean, you know, what's the hope or the dream? Do you hope that IWA is going to adopt, get adopted into IFRS and to GAP and to others as well?
They're twins. ISSB is standardizing the quantity metrics, environmental and social, around impact. Tons of water, liters of, tons of CO2, liters of water, percentages of diversity, etc. The IWA is valuing these impacts and standardizing these values according to different contexts. So a litre of water in London doesn't have the same value as a litre of water in sub-Saharan Africa. So you have to take these contexts into account. The two will hopefully come together 2.5 or 3 years from now. And then you will have, as you were saying, generally accepted impact principles that compare with GAAP accounting for the financial profit that companies make.
Which is inherently what these organizations are about. They're about transparency, accountability, and relatability across each of the different organizations.
And it's important to realize, Asha, that there's a historical parallel here with what happened with GAAP. GAAP accounting came in 4 years after the 1929 Wall Street crash, because investors sat up and realized that they had been investing without real transparency on the profits that companies make. Each company could pick its own accounting principles, and there were no auditors to verify the numbers. That today you say, my God, were we really investing without knowing how much profit companies were making? Well, ESG is in the same position. You have 40 trillion wanting to deliver impact without any visibility on the real impacts created by companies. And so the effort to bring transparency is very similar to the effort that occurred at the beginning of the 30s. It took 4 years then to get to GAAP accounting and the use of auditors. It took 2 years now to get to the creation of the ISSB and EU legislation on transparency after the COVID-19 epidemic. So we're on our way within the next 2 to 3 years to having the tools for regulators to say, we want impact statements to be published by everyone.
Yeah, and that's promising also to hear historically as well, because I think we hear a lot of the discussion, whether it's, you know, going back to the identity discussion about how parties sit next to each other versus which one's the right regulation or which one's the right metrics to use, to know that GAAP was done in 4 years, that, you know, this can be done.
It then took a few years to bed it down, but the whole world ended up following the United States. Perhaps this time around, Europe would lead the US, depending on the political powers that be in the two places.
Yeah. So, you get the examples you gave, you know, obviously like ExxonMobil, Tesla, and others, I mean, you know, and also just hearing about IWA and its twin ISSB seems to be like an immediate benefit to the public market companies. And, you know, I, I'm I'm stating the obvious here, but you know, your career has been so much in the private markets, Sarani. So how, you know, why are you focusing here, and how do you think it's going to apply to the private markets? And so, and for, again, for the benefit of the viewers, listeners, you know, public companies are those that are sold a portion or all of their company to the public, and they can be found on, typically on stock exchanges. And then private companies are those that are owned by the founders or investors, and that could be high net worth individuals, venture capital, private equity, and other institutional investors.
So although I started out in venture capital and private equity, Asha, when I left Apex, I became very involved in multi-asset portfolio management, sitting on the boards of the Oxford Investment Committee and the Harvard Management Board, several other big pools of capital that were investing across asset classes. It's easier to start measuring impact in the private markets because the companies tend to be smaller and single product or two or three product companies, rather than huge conglomerates, as you will often find quoted on our stock exchanges. But investors are changing their values, and they mainly invest in public markets, which is why ESG has sort of led the way in terms of the quantum of capital flows. And so my efforts today right across all asset classes. They're public markets and private markets. They cover not just securities, but investment in real assets like property. There is another historical parallel that gives me a sense of historical perspective when we look at impact measurement, and it's the parallel with measuring risk. Now, we didn't always measure risk. We started to measure risk in the 1950s. And at that time, investors looked at return and had this notion of risk being in the background, a bit like the notion of ESG, that you have impact in the background. And academics at the University of Chicago famously began to look backwards at how a stock or a bond had behaved and say, well, this is a certain volatility that's characteristic of this particular security. And so we can assume that in the future it's going to behave more or less like that. Now, what seems like a very simple idea had huge repercussions. It created the opportunity for venture capital and private equity and hedge funds and emerging market securities to make their ways into portfolios, which up until then only had the government bonds of your country and the stocks of your national stock exchange. So the measurement of risk brought risk-adjusted returns and diversification to change the world of investment. The measurement of impact is going to do the same and is beginning to do the same. We're beginning to see investors moving out of coal mines. Very difficult today to raise money for coal mines. We see a lot of investors moving away from fossil fuels generally. We see money going into new clean energy companies. We see new technologies beginning to change, not to just to the area that adjoins the energy world, but changing education, changing health, changing banking, using technology and these change values. And so we are living at the early stage of an impact revolution now. And once again, this transparency is the tool we need in order for the revolution to make its way rigorously and fairly across companies and the products they sell. And this is what's happening. You see apps in France. There's an app called the yucca, which is used by more than 20 million people to gauge the impact on their health of buying a product on the supermarket shelf. That's where we're heading. But for that, you need data. And the data is what underlies the generally accepted impact principles we've been talking about.
And so, I mean, can you give us an example of an IWA success story? And I guess where I'm going specifically with that is the International Foundation of Valuing Impacts that you started with Harvard Business School, and some of the sectors that you've identified and how that's reflecting into valuations as well. And maybe touch on some of the challenges, because I think it's always great that we look at it from both aspects.
Yeah. I think the big success of the IWAI is that it has proved that you can measure impact and that you can translate them into monetary terms that enable comparison between impacts and with profits. And so when you see some of the posts I have been making on LinkedIn and on Twitter.
By The Economist, for example.
And well, The Economist, yeah. The letter to The Economist. When you see companies compared in terms of their product impact, their environmental impact from operations, their employment impact from their labor practices, their supply chain impact, your eyes open up. All of a sudden, you begin to see companies in a different way. You see them three-dimensionally, risk, return, and impact, instead of just risk, return. And the great success of the IWAI is to show that this is already making its way into financial markets and affecting the valuation of companies.
Yeah. And so has it been backward looking to date when you apply those principles? And is there a set number of companies that you're tracking as well?
So we've measured companies on the basis of the information that they have made available publicly.
Okay.
So there are 3,000 companies, environmental impact, 2,600 companies, employment impact, 10,000 companies, supply chain impact, and across 9 sectors, representative companies in each sector where we've measured their product impact. So we've been driven by the availability of the data. But the data isn't standardized and isn't verified. And as they say at Harvard Business School, garbage in, garbage out. So you need to standardize and verify the information on which we base our decisions. So our goal now is to set up, as you were saying, a foundation whose job it is to standardize the valuation of impact and to bring those standards to the ISSB standardized metrics.
Right. Great. And so, you know, building on that, what do you think, what level of adoption or market conditions do you believe is required for both, you know, IWAI, IWA, and ISSB to be successful? And, you know, what do you think the level of adoption has been to date? Because, you know, for example, in the recent news, there's been divisive views on the ISSB's, you know, interpretation of scope 3, for example. And so we're starting to see the market react. I had a friend just the other day that in, let's call it the traditional finance sector, send me a white paper about why ESG shouldn't be separate because it is just a concept of good investing. So, you know, which is good because it shows dialogue, but it'd be great to hear your views on what you think market conditions should look like.
So we're at the early melting pot stage now of all these different approaches to impact measurement. But we have the organizations in place to establish, and at the end of the day, you could say almost provide regulators with the ability to impose standards. They can't impose the standards themselves, but they give regulators the tools to do that. So it's not unnatural that a host of organizations and people who've been interested in impact measurement over decades are now beginning to see that they provide only a part of the puzzle. The picture on the puzzle hadn't existed until now. And the picture that is emerging is we're going to have impact accounting. We're going to be measuring impacts in the same way that we measure profits, and we're going to be putting the two together. So during this period where these different views are coming together, you're beginning to see the consolidation of different efforts. So the SASB and the IIRC, excuse all the initials, which were in the impact measurement space, merged and became part of the ISSB, which is building on their work. Similarly, the IFBI, again, initials, forgive me, and the Value Balancing Alliance, which was established globally but based in Europe, have come together to standardize their approaches. And so we are in the position today where we're trying to provide regulators with the tools to make sure that every investor gets the same information on the same comparable basis at the same time. And the reason regulators are concerned today is that that isn't happening. The sophisticated investor knows how to go to the IWA and see the figures. But an unsophisticated investor wouldn't know that the IWA even exists. And so regulators are very concerned that some investors are being disadvantaged and are pushing for this measurement and this standardization. Now, it's quite amazing that the SEC is talking of mandatory disclosure of every environmental impact, including supply chain impact. In the United States, a few years ago, people would have said, that's unbelievable. Impacts can't be measured. You know, and in the days before gap accounting, when gap accounting was being mooted, Asha, some people said it's impossible to have the same accounting principle for every company irrespective of size and sector. And if you can do it, it'll spell the end of American capitalism. You know, we have a similar backlash now from organizations that don't want their impact to be very accurately exposed. But it's going to happen because it's what consumers want and investors want and talent want and regulators at the end of the day want.
Well, I mean, best of luck, Saroni, on that mission. I mean, as an investor, I can certainly say, you know, to be able to do your job as an investor and think relative value and put capital to work, mechanisms and tools like this are incredibly valuable just to do business as usual, right? That's what I think a number of folks say, whether they, whichever fence they sit on, they want to do business as usual and they want to be equipped with doing that. So I wish you the best of luck on that quest. The question I had a couple of questions for you to kind of end off, but and they're more personal in nature. First is, how do you like to make your money more impactful?
Yeah, so I very much continue to believe in the power of entrepreneurs to bring change. So I'm investing in early stage impact ventures, personally, mainly high tech. They cover all of the areas we've talked about. And they represent a new way of investing, which in my view will deliver better return. For my public portfolio, I don't have fossil fuels. Sure, fossil fuels would continue for a period of time, but you'd have done a lot better if you'd invested in Tesla than if you'd invested in Ford or General Motors over that period. And I also I'm a great believer in finding different types of securities that lend a social and a financial return, like impact bonds, for example, or now sustainability-linked bonds, of which are $1.5 trillion across the world. So I'm very keen on these new types of securities, because it's the first time that we have seen social values and environmental values brought into the bond market. And $1.5 trillion is a very significant amount of money. So my portfolio reflects my values, if you like. I believe it will outperform. It's certainly showing that it outperforms now.
Thank you for sharing. And then, and also, you know, a concept that you're familiar with is a theory of change. And so what we're asking, or I'm asking each of our guests, is what is the vision you're seeking to live in and leave behind?
I would like to see every company measuring its success according to both its profit and its impact performance. And I think that's where the world is going, out of necessity. There's no other way that we can deal with the environmental pollution challenges and climate change, or even with the social disparities that we see. Companies create pollution, not governments, and companies contribute to social issues in very large measure. So I think the tool for achieving that is bringing impact transparency. And so I would like to live in a world where GAP and GAPE, generally accepted impact principles, sit side by side. Every meeting to discuss business strategy involves both sets of numbers. And we get companies to bring solutions to the great challenges we face, instead of creating and aggravating these challenges.
Thank you. I hope we see that soon. Thank you so much for your time, Sir Ronnie.
Thank you.
Asha. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Humanizing Investment with The Conduit. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. Please do subscribe. To learn more about Sir Ronald and his work, please go to his website, www.sirronaldcohen.org. And for more information about The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.